All right, Bo Rude's in the house. Game recap, pod rolling. Oklahoma comes to town. 49-14 is the final score. Well, and that's it for us. Well, right. I don't know what.
Next week, we on?
I mean, so it's 4:30. About 90 minutes ago, the news broke with Shenander and his firing. We'll get to that. It is interesting that, like, so last week we recorded two pods on Sunday, the day Scott Frost was fired. That feels like that was 50 years ago right now.
Talk about having a game plan and not being able to, like,
I know.
Like, we've thrown out two pod ideas just because we're like, we got to talk about what just
happened. I know. Well, okay. So last week was, I want to work backwards into the game a little bit because last week was interesting to me. You have this like thought on what it would be like if Frost gets fired, how are people going to react? What is it going to be like? I don't know how it was for you, like in your, as you were absorbing things, it was interesting to me how quickly people seemingly got over Frost. Like, I didn't think there was much turmoil, angst.
No.
Like, the people turn the page way faster than I anticipated them to.
Yeah, I think that's the sign to me that it was time.
Agreed. Like,
people had crossed the threshold seemingly sometime between the Northwestern loss and the Georgia Southern loss. Somewhere in there.
Yes.
The collective had turned the page already, and then the news happened. They were ready for it, right? Like, that doesn't happen when it's a Solich or a Pelini where there's a split, and the split is, it's real. I think that people had sort of collectively gone there, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a sign that it was the right move, that even maybe more people than we even give credit to wanted this to happen, you know? And The other thing that was interesting, though, was it was amazing. Someone put it this way. I can't remember. Forgive me, whoever said, someone said on the radio, maybe it was almost like last week was an entire off season crammed into 5 days, where it was like, you know, we joke around like you can't help but start drinking the Kool-Aid right as the season's going to start. Like, there was this bizarre hope and confidence that started to kind of like snowball as the week unfolded, to where I think it was Urban Meyer, Reggie Bush, multiple people picked Nebraska to beat Oklahoma. And I kind of didn't understand where a lot of that, and I'm not trying to be like, you and I had predicted that Nebraska would beat Oklahoma before the season, but I don't know how you could watch the first three games of the year and then think Nebraska was going to beat Oklahoma. Like, I mean, it was
that,
just weird.
That is, so think these are the best of the best for TV analysts get to work, you know. This was it, you know. Urban and Reggie, like, these are this is the biggest game of the week for the Big Ten. And like, these guys are picking Nebraska, and it doesn't make sense. So, like, I feel less crazy about how I've viewed Nebraska the last few years because they view it the same way, too.
Right.
We all are having trouble understanding the progression of this sort of, the losing ways we've had in the Frost era. In this game specifically was a loss in the likes we haven't seen yet. Like, we've seen bad defense, good offense can't win, good defense, bad offense can't win, good offense and defense, bad special teams can't win. We haven't seen bad, killed by a big team.
Yes.
That's sort of what we saw in the old days.
Right. And this is what you made this point when we were talking, I think in our like season prediction pod, where you were like, it's not obvious to me that Nebraska's bad. And this is where I think a lot of the people that were in the anti-Frost camp and didn't believe camp, they're able to play this I told you so card and this like, see, how are you so stupid to believe in this? And I don't think that's totally fair.
It's not, it's revisionist.
Yes.
It's revisionist history, because up until this point, it's been this close every week.
It had, like, what happened this past weekend hadn't happened. You'd have to go back to probably Ohio State 2019 when game day came here with, you know, Justin Fields, Chase Young, and those guys. But even that ass kicking wasn't as bad as this ass kicking.
Correct.
Or you'd have to go to, remember Michigan in year one, mm-hmm. where it was like the third game of the Frost era, and they went to Ann Arbor and just got their doors blown off.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, other than that, there really hasn't been this kind of a butt kicking.
Which bought, so that's what bought Frost as much time as yes. he got, is they wanted him to succeed, first of all. And second of all, in the past 15 years before that, when we lost big
right.
and bad and ugly. And people were tired of big and bad and ugly. And as much as we didn't win with Frost, he kept us in. His program was in games, right? Now, this is the first sign, though, that it's gone from that to, this reminds us of bad.
This is football. Like Riley at the
Riley,
end. Like,
you know, yes.
Right. I mean, because like, how do you explain this? I wrote this down. Like, how do you explain this right now? Where it's like, last year, Nebraska blew out Northwestern 56-7. This year, lost to him. Last year, Nebraska really dominated both Fordham and Buffalo. They're two kind of like easier games on their schedule. This year, got pushed by North Dakota, lose to Georgia Southern. Last year, at Oklahoma, against a team that was, I don't know if you thought this year's Oklahoma team or last year's Oklahoma team was better or worse. I don't know. But whatever it was, yeah. they went to Oklahoma and were right there with them. Also, I could argue Anthony Grant, Casey Thompson, Trey Palmer, greater than Martinez, Ramir Johnson, Samari Touré.
Correct.
Better special teams with better kickers at this point. Mm-hmm. Although Bushini didn't have a great day, and we'll get into that a little bit. But like, yet everything is dramatic. Like, all of a sudden, the wheels have come off this thing. Like, it's hard to explain. I know we keep on, you and I have been beating a dead horse of like, I think, does all of it come back to JoJo Doman, Damian Daniels, Ben Stilley, Cam Taylor-Britt, Markell Dismuke, and Deonte Williams?
Come back to that? I think a lot of it does, because that's sort of, I mean, JoJo's on the edge, but no, I would say it's the heart of our defense was those guys in a lot of ways, right? The two safeties and JoJo's covering the inside routes.
Right.
A lot of the game, and tackling on the edges. And then like Cam Taylor Britt's a pro, if a second rounder. I mean, I think those guys maybe covered up for, you know, I wouldn't say we called schematically bad things, but I mean, we this year have gotten schemed to death
seemingly,
and we've gotten beat like one-on-one in so many areas. That like it's a combo this year of like bad, you know, getting out schemed and bad play. Where last year it's sort of like I didn't see as much of a scheme issue, and we definitely weren't getting out played
right.
most of the time.
It is wild how many times this season already there has been plays where it is like hat on a hat, boom, safety, running back.
Cannot tackle
house call, or cannot tackle huge gain.
Like,
and were those, maybe those plays were happening more last year, but Deonte Williams and those guys were making the tackle.
There was 10 of those plays last year, they made 9. And this year, if there's 10 of those plays, they're
making
two.
Like one or two.
Yeah. I mean,
if they're that.
Giving up these big inside easy runs. Like these guys are barely, it's a one cut
yes.
break, and it looks like we have no idea how to tackle somebody.
I know
our angles, Nick. I mean, I've watched a few of these guys take angles where I'm going,
yeah, what are you doing?
Where are you? What are you thinking about?
Well, and that's the thing that also is tough. You know, there was the quote, and we'll get into a little bit of the game here. This is a nice game recap here as we're all over the place, but I didn't even know. I sat down and rewatched the first half. I have some other thoughts this morning, but like, It is challenging at this point where, because you had the quote from Miles Farmer after the game where it's like, we've been tagging off in practice for years. It's going to take time, because Mickey talked about how they've been tackling more in practice and all those things. And what's hard about that is a lot of people look at that quote and they react to it as like a damning quote, which it probably doesn't reflect well. But tackling and physicality hadn't been an issue until now. So all these things are
tackling helps. Obviously, you could say that.
Of course. I'm seeing
other things than practicing tackling. I mean, I'm seeing like guys that don't know how to take angles. Like you can say, talk about everything you can say about tackling is important, but like if you don't have the instinct to take the right angles in games, like,
right.
I mean, you've got a longer way to go than just like a couple of tackling drills. Yeah. Like this is like instincts. This is your ability.
Right.
I'm struggling to just put it all in tackling drills right now.
Well, you know? I agree.
And schematically, then we've been schemed to death.
Seems like it. And that, I mean, I thought, because you were at the game. So let's get into a little bit of because the atmosphere seemed like it was incredible. And the juice to start the game,
baby,
was it as palpable and real as it came across on TV? Because Gus, Joel, all the Big Noon Kickoff guys were like, this motherfucking place is rocking right now.
It was rocking. Nebraska football has an endless supply of optimism. We're great. You want to know why we're great fans? That's why we're great fans. Right. Like, we've just lost our coach.
The Georgia Southern.
We lost the Georgia Cross Southern. God, like, and we're going to come out and be the loudest we've ever been this season. And truly, like, it affected the game for the first quarter. But, you know, I was kind of amazed, but I was in.
You watched the game. Like, there was a different level of energy and emotion and just that, I keep saying juice. Like, they just were overflowing with juice. Even early on, you probably didn't see this because you were at the game. Like, Buford came downhill and made a tackle, like the third play of the game.
Yeah.
And he stood up and he turned to the sidelines. And you know when people, like, he's doing that, like, snarl to the sideline. And people on the side, everybody's like, it was that kind of energy. Yeah. We're like, this defense got lit up by Georgia Southern, and they're like stoning Oklahoma early and acting like this is what we do.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow. And so, but here's the issue, because like Mickey touched on a lot of, and hit a lot of the right notes last year, and like, hey, we're starting over. We're 0-0. We're wiping the slate clean. But here's the problem is like that energy and that juice and that emotion can only take you so far, because when all of a sudden, eventually, like, you settle into the game, and that's when your foundation takes over. And you can sit there and hit the, like, we're going to restart everything Saturday. But oftentimes, how you perform on a Saturday is more of a reflection of everything you've done Monday through Friday in the winter, the spring, and the summer. That's the beauty of football. It's like football is like the ultimate culmination of, like, you can't just like turn on the light switch and then have it go. But it seemed like that energy and that juice was real early. And then it just, like, all of a sudden when all of a sudden Oklahoma punched back and the juice started waning, you found out we're like, football is about blocking and tackling, simply put.
Yeah.
We can get, and we all do it, we get seduced and talk about the quarterbacks and the wide receivers and the running backs, but football comes down to blocking the opponent and getting off blocks and tackling your opponent. And when you're not good in those areas, you can wipe the slate clean all you want. You can have all the juice you want. You can have all the energy you want, which is great, right? Like, I think some of that stuff should be a non-negotiable thing, like playing hard, playing with energy, playing with emotion. But if you're not good at blocking and tackling, there's kind of nothing you can do.
Yes.
I threw a lot at you.
You did. So I'm going to start with, you said the place is rocking. We have the juice. Buford's flexing.
Yes.
We can get into the scenarios, but like that juice was only so much. And it was only so much that when they run a quarterback draw and we can't take the right angles and we can't get a guy down and he goes 60 yards for a touchdown.
Right.
The juice left us. And then that's what we were left with. Like
then all of a sudden you're like, you are who you are.
That's who we are right now. After that play, we came down to the reality of, we're not doing certain things right. and people are exposing us.
The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors, and I want to talk to you guys about energy efficiency. And if you go onto Pella's website right now, you look at it, and how about this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different types of windows or doors. By Pella, won the Energy Star 2020 Most Energy Efficient Award. That's big time stuff right there. And they achieved that in a couple of waves. They got insulated glass, which slows the heat transfer, keeping your home at a more comfortable temperature. They got types of low E glass, which is a glass coating that has been optimized for your climate. They got triple pane glass, which you can upgrade to for increased insulating airspace. And within all of that, one of the keys is proper installation, which is key for window and doors to perform at their best. And you know the Pella experts are excellent at that. Bottom line, energy efficiency matters in making your home more comfortable, and Pella Windows and Doors are at the top of the line when it comes to energy efficiency. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com.
Well, do you real quick, I don't, you know, sometimes we do like a drive-by-drive thing. Can we hammer through the first half?
That's
like, this will be like kind of fast. Okay, so obviously, Oklahoma, first drive, Buford's flexing on them. Nebraska does a good job, gets Oklahoma to punt. Nebraska's first drive offensively, I mean, dashed them, just marched down the field. Anthony Grant's balling, their swing passes to Palmer. Then the touchdown to Palmer was incredible.
Beautiful touch on that throw. Oh. So that was the thing, is like, this is where Adrian was struggled so much that I've, even though Casey didn't have a great game, the things Casey does well that Adrian could never do was like, that's just a little touch pass.
I mean, that's perfect.
That just teardropped in, and it's just throw and catch.
Yep.
But I feel like we would miss that type of throw every time in the Martinez era. So I'm not trying to bash.
No, I agree.
I'm trying to say it was very refreshing to be like,
boom.
I do think Thompson's just got that ability to just to make the play he needs to make.
Right.
And I mean, we were from there. It's high five.
Oh,
I mean, people are talking about this guy. We're taking this
one. Yes, yes.
Everybody in that stadium thought this is our day.
Because the moment, even the Mickey's tunnel walk, and it's Mickey Joseph. He's a former Husker. Like you start like I almost felt like I had tears welling up when he came out and he did this whole thing. Like you're like,
because we're writing we're writing the new story,
right,
aren't we?
Here we go, you know, and then make Oklahoma punt, march down the field, score. Everybody's pumped. The one thing, and this is why I wanted to go drive by drive, is Nebraska had more opportunities, or they hung in there more than you think.
Yeah.
Early in the game.
Yep.
So, okay, you talked about it. Oklahoma's second drive, Dylan Gabriel has a 61-yard scramble touchdown. That is, like, there were so many things that were terrible. Reimer took a terrible angle. Tommy Hill got thrown out, and to quote my guy Jay Foreman, he got thrown out the club.
Yeah.
the Oklahoma wide receiver took dude and just ran him down the field.
Yeah.
And now, again, I think a lot of people thought Gabriel was going to go out of bounds, you know, but still, like,
we had two or three guys take bad angles instead of just getting him down.
Right.
And giving up 20, you give up a touchdown, and the air goes out
of
the building.
Did it?
Oh, yeah.
Because you kind of go, oh, yeah, it went, shoot.
I mean, it wasn't over at that point, but it was, oh, this isn't going to be the magical, easy thing that we were hoping it was going to be. It's going to get, like, we showed that our defense did not make the improvements that we were hoping they would make.
Right.
And that play, I think they started to lose confidence quick.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? You give that up right away. And if you've been doubting, like, the doubt is going to come back quick.
Cause it wasn't even, I'm not trying to take anything away from Dylan Gabriel. It wasn't like it was that amazing of a run.
He's not that fast.
No. And I even think he kind of, like, he hit the sideline. It was like, is nobody going to,
well, Reimer's really fast. So I was like, well, Ryan, you know, so our safety takes a bad angle and just, like,
Tommy Hill got thrown out the club.
Tommy Hill got, he had a couple of drinks and
they said, the you're out of here. Said,
this guy's got to go. He's had too many.
Debo came.
He said, I'm not leading. So Debo, it's
my bike now.
Yeah.
Ooh, and just threw him out.
Threw this guy. But
yeah.
And then, you know, Reimer just couldn't quite, like, Reimer's a fast dude.
Yes, and Reimer took
him down
a terrible angle though.
Yeah.
You saw a lot of there was a swing pass where Reimer took a bad angle at the end of the second quarter. But you're right. It felt like that play, it settled Oklahoma in, and it got it felt like it took some of the air out of the stadium. Well,
the momentum was we had it.
Right.
And we could have used that against them, and then their defense, I mean, our defense could have used that. And their offense would have been those. Their offense was trying to find their game,
right?
And we let it. We got them in their rhythm quick,
right?
Gabriel got settled down quick.
Yes,
like you want that quarterback to feel, off his game for as long as possible.
So then Nebraska's second drive, they picked up one first down, running the ball. Like Grant was running great.
Yeah.
Then they get to a third and four. And Casey Thompson and Marcus Washington weren't quite on the same page. It was like a curl flat against a zone. And Marcus Washington kept on, you're supposed to sit right in that hole. And Casey threw it there and Marcus kept going. So missed out. It was a third and four. It would have moved the chains. Like these are these little moments, but it doesn't happen. They have to punt. But here's the thing people forget about. Oklahoma went three and out on the next possession. Nebraska made them punt again.
Yeah.
So like early on, did Oklahoma make any adjustments that you saw? Did they start doing? Because it seemed like early on, it was like outside of the 161-yard scramble, the first three possessions, Nebraska's defense was seemingly doing okay.
Yeah, we were doing.
Or maybe it's just that energy emotion stuff. I don't know.
They got settled in by the fourth drive of the game and they never had to look back. Like to me, that's it is like, we didn't, we needed to get through a half where our defense wasn't on the ropes and it just didn't take, we didn't get through the first quarter before we were on the ropes.
Well,
fighting for our life. That's not what you just can't do that against the good team.
And not all tempos are created equal. Man, did they play fast.
Yeah.
I mean, fast. And so their tempo combined within Nebraska's offense, like losing its mojo. Whipple and Crikey.
Yeah.
I've lost my mojo. Like those guys lost it. But here's what was interesting. So Nebraska makes Oklahoma go three and out and punt. Nebraska's third drive. The AJ Allen's in the game. That little dude's got some pop to him that I kind of like. That guy.
He's taking time away from Grant.
Yeah,
he's sneaky. They want to play him more than Gabe Irvin. They are like taking carries away from Grant. Even
he runs hard he plays with a little
quick feet.
Yes,
that's why it's kind of
and he's just for a guy that's not very big. He runs pretty tough.
Yeah,
he does. The reason they run three straight good runs to AJ Allen. Mm-hmm. They pick up a first down. Then Whipple calls three straight pass plays and they give up two straight sacks. It was just interesting that you run, it's working. Not to say that you have to just you keep running it, but it was just interesting to go three straight runs, then three straight passes. Casey Thompson gets sacked twice. Nebraska has to punt.
Yeah.
Oklahoma's fourth drive. This is when all of a sudden Oklahoma's they got into their recliner and they're like, remember Joey and Chandler where they're like, this is where Oklahoma was they Joey and Chandler did pretty good.
Me and my brother got matching recliners one year for Christmas. We thought that was great. We literally would sit in the basement in these.
You guys would time it up and just.
By the way, what a great gift! A lazy boy.
It is. Who invented the late? What did it was? Imagine going on Shark Tank. Hey sharks, who hates just sitting in regular chairs? It doesn't even need a pitch. You just go, hey, check this out.
Sir, where did you get your inspiration for this? I'm the laziest man you'll ever meet, and I thought I don't want to have to actually work on reclining. I just want to pull it back.
I don't want to move and lay down on my couch. I don't want to walk all the way to my bed.
I want to pull
a lever and go back and have the feet go up. Incredible, incredible invention.
It's
the lazy boy recliner. But basically at this point, Dylan Gabriel, Marvin Mims, all these guys, they got in their recliner. But They pick up a 3rd and 6 on a slant.
Mm-hmm.
Nebraska blitzed. Gabriel read it. They picked up a 3rd and 6.
They run slants.
I know. God. I know. It's well, then the next play, they run a slant and go, and Tommy Hill was just bit on that thing. Yeah. Just bit on it bad. You said slant? And 6. So Tommy Hill already has gotten thrown out the club. Then he Pac-Man'd a slant, and they slant go. They're officially in the Lazy Boy recliners. It's 14-7. Nebraska's 4th drive. This is when all of a sudden they're really like struggling. 3 and out, got sacked on 3rd down and lost 12 yards on the drive.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where Buscini punts it. Mims is able to catch it with room. He gets down the Oklahoma sideline. He returns it all the way to the 23-yard line. Now it's a problem because 5 plays later, Oklahoma scores a touchdown. It's 21-7 at
this point. Yeah, that's a bigger return than I think we... It probably gets overlooked because the defense, you know, played poorly the rest of the game. But, you know, there's a flow to a game. It's the, you know, the QB draw, that return... That 3rd down, like those are the plays that, like, I think break your back more than just the, like, hey, slant and go touchdown.
Right.
It's more the, like, they picked up the 3rd down before that, where it's like you had them where you wanted them and you can't stop the slant.
Right. 3rd and 6, slant.
Yeah.
Like, chains move. Next play, slant and go touchdown.
Yeah. Like, though, and then it just drives me nuts. But yeah, we can't spread out and tackle and get this guy down. And, man, now we're swimming against a good
team. And this is where Nebraska's offense is they go another 3 and out and punt. They lose 5 yards on the drive. Oklahoma's next drive is 6 plays, touchdown, and they have the trick play double pass.
Good play. I was screaming it out.
Could you sense it?
By the way,
their lineup, they're twins to the...
Well, when the quarterback steps forward, like he really was like intentionally went forward to throw it back, which I'm not sure other than I think it's a better angle to catch. And so like, as the ball was coming back, I started yelling double pass. Cause I was like,
you could read it. The old linebacker,
you know, the old like, me call it. So I call it. And then they throw a touchdown. And the guy behind me goes, good call. And I went, thanks. I go, thanks. I guess.
Wow. Like, you saw it coming, huh?
Well, it's like, this is where it frustrates me. It's like, you got to see the angle of the throw to know, like, somebody's got to, like, you know, some safety's got to go, that's odd. Like, you got to have the, like,
yes,
this looks fishy. Smell the fishy smell. And then, you know.
Because it didn't look like they had run some spot passes, some wide receiver screen stuff. Like, this one looked different.
Because it was intentionally thrown backwards at an angle. And my thought is
it makes sense.
When a shooter in basketball, where's the easiest shot?
Yeah,
in the post, back out, right? It's harder to catch it turning around. Yeah, like turning around, going forward is a hard shot.
Right.
Same way, it's hard to like be going forward, turn, throw. Like he's catching it backwards, can see the field. Like it's an easier throw. So those are little tips that the safety really has to be good and see it. And like you've got to be able to, like, this is fishy. Haul ass.
It's a great call.
Yeah,
it's a great call.
Great call, great execution. We just have to, it's hard to defend. Somebody's got to smell the rat and make the play.
Right. A great call. So now all of a sudden Oklahoma's up 28-7. It feels like it's pretty much ball game at this point, but there's 11 minutes and 35 seconds left in the second quarter.
Yeah.
So it's like they hung in there, and then all of a sudden, in a span of like 5 minutes, the game got out of control.
Yeah.
Nebraska did have an 11-play drive that got all the way down to the Oklahoma 19-yard line and got stuffed on 4th and 2.
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma missed a field goal. Nebraska punted, and then Oklahoma scored another touchdown right before the half to make it 35-7. And it's ballgame at that point. It certainly didn't help that then Trey Palmer fumbled on the very first play of the third quarter.
The Nick Bob Podcast is powered by Runza. You know, there are a lot of ways to greet someone. Hey, hi, hello, what's up? Another way is, what's popping? Well, here's the thing. That greeting has taken on a new meaning now, because the answer to what's popping is now Runza's new popcorn chicken. That's what's popping. Runza's new popcorn chicken is amazing. Little, bite-sized, delicious, all-white meat chicken that make any day better immediately. I love them. My wife loves them. My kids cannot get enough. Two-year-old Mac, six-year-old Mava are constantly wanting to get it popping. Great for a snack, great for a meal. Pair them with the best crinkle fries on planet Earth, and you are set. All I got to say is you need to get out to a Runza location nearest you and get it popping. What's so hard to understand about that? Get it popping with Runza's all-new popcorn chicken. Runza makes it all better.
But man, did the offense go into the tank. First drive of the game for Nebraska, 6 plays, 77 yards, 7 points. The next 7 drives for Nebraska, 37 plays, 76 yards, 0 points. They had fewer yards on their next 37 plays than they did on their first 7.
So this was a, to me, when we are at our worst on offense, and it's been the way this way for a couple of years, we have all these negative plays yes. to start out drives. And we do it, like we can do it for like a full game where every first and second down, we end up losing 2 to 6 yards. And I'm going, that doesn't happen to us. Like our defense doesn't stop them for losses for a whole game, every right. first down. Like, you know, like I don't know what is going on that we can't, even if you run it and you get a yard or two.
A second and 9 is way different.
We can't lose.
Right.
We can't lose yardage like the way we have been. It's insane to me that we can't just scheme things to be like, all right, this might not be the home run or the big chunk, but like it gets us on track.
Right.
Like we aren't doing a good job of getting on track because it's all about opening up the playbook. And every time you can't call a play to get a couple of yards, like you've just shrunk the playbook completely
right.
for your next plays. And then on third down, you've really shrunk it. Like you've shrunk your options. And that's my problem with for our lack of ability to like get us, you know, like in a schedule, on a rhythm.
So what do you make of the offense in because we've talked about the defense, we'll get more into the defense, but the offense, there was a lot of confidence and optimism and a lot of, well, hey, listen, Nebraska's defense is bad, but their offense is pretty good. That offense is going to continue to move the ball. And all of a sudden, was it more about they ran into the sixth ranked team in the country and they exposed some things? Or what happened
their
to the
defense
offense?
Was good.
Yeah,
they were good. They had some really good players. Not like necessarily world beaters, but they had some good dudes. That 23 was a good play. He got kicked out, but when he was in there, he was wrecking shop. But it seemed like our receivers and quarterbacks were missing the ones
they were a little,
we had.
Yeah.
We had to get on schedule. And this is the underrated part about keeping a game, us in a game. We needed to stay in the field and hold the ball. Like
that's
we,
the thing. Yeah. We had these fast 3 and outs.
And Nick, I think we played too fast. In my opinion, they should have slowed the game down. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, we score and it's looking good. They get to 14-7. We need to be like, let's call the plays that get us 3 to 4 yards that we can depend on.
Right.
And let's run the clock down to the last second and let's slow this game down.
Yeah.
Let's get them out of their rhythm. Let's just hold the ball. Even if we don't score always,
right.
we're marching up the field slowly, running the clock, making the game. Oh, maybe it's 17-10 at half. Or, you know, we get a field goal and we eat up a lot of time. We don't have to score every time. We have to keep the ball out of a good offense's hands. And we got to keep our very limited defense right now off
gotta
the field.
Got to protect them a little bit.
That's the holistic mindset. And I just think they didn't. They did our defense no favors. Like when you're playing a good team, you got to do them a favor. And they're losing yards on every first and second down. It's unacceptable. You cannot do that. So we can blame the defense, but the offense adds to the
problem. That's one of the things. Like, the defense did not play well. And let's be real, Oklahoma called off the dogs big time. If they wanted to score 60, 70 points yesterday, they could have done that. Venables did Mickey Joseph a solid and was like,
he did.
Like,
out of respect.
Out of respect towards you, we're going to slow
the greatest rivalry in college football.
Right.
We'll see you next year.
What I was saying was the defense, yes, they didn't perform well, but the offense had its hand in how poorly they performed in the first half and how fast some of their drives were. Did not help the defense at all.
Three and out, punt return to the 20, three and out, that's how snowballs happen. And yes. Then Trey Palmer fumbling the opening drive, right. Then it just, that like took it from this is bad to we're embarrassed.
Yes. It was done for all intents and purposes.
The game was done. It was already done, but it was like people were like, oh, I'll just leave the stadium now almost.
Right.
It was that sort of like, you can't even believe it. We get a first down, but then we fumble.
Right. It's hard. Like, I didn't think Casey Thompson played great yesterday, but at the same time, like, when you are running for your life and you're getting heated up as much as he is, like, it's not easy. I think you maybe saw a little bit of, this is one of the things we were concerned about. Anthony Grant likes to bounce a lot of things. And Anthony Grant also, he's one of those guys that the same thing that makes him good is that he's not going down, but sometimes you got to just get it back to the line of scrimmage and live for the second down. He, a couple of times, tried to Tecmo Bowl this thing and
messed up the whole drive.
And then you're all of a sudden, instead of being second and 10 or second and 9, it's now second and 13. And that's the difference between, you can do that against Georgia Southern, you can do that against North Dakota, you can't do that against Oklahoma. Yeah, and
the old Amir Abdullah was like the king of, like, he worked his butt off to get to the line of scrimmage sometimes.
Yes.
Like, to consistently get a yard or two when there's nothing, or like when there's a 3-yard loss, you get to the line. Like, those are the kind of plays we need. Like, and I think Grant and
Allen
are, and Gabe Irvin got it.
Gabe Irvin, our boy, did some good things.
Homer.
I just want good things
he
for that
He got an opening, though, and he looked kind of good.
Yes, and he kind of had that. You can tell when somebody's got that body language, like, finally, I'm getting like
I got a hole.
Like, he had a hole. Yes.
I was so happy for Gabe Irvin that he had his first hole
right. In
college football.
I know. I want to send him like a cookie or something and be like, hang in there. I want that picture of the cat hanging.
Hang in there, buddy. Gabe Irvin. He had a hole.
I need to find a card with the cat hanging from the wire that just says, hang in there. Hang in there, Gabe. Sincerely, Nick and Bo. I think you would appreciate that.
We really like Gabe Irvin.
Why do we like him so? I mean,
because he's gotten a bad rap.
Yeah, it's just crappy situations, crappy blocking. It's BS.
Gabe, if you're a pod listener out there, just understand we are big fans of your hole and your run this last week.
We have endorsed Gabe Irvin for what we don't know, but
Gabe.
Hang in there, Gabe. Just hang in there, pal. But yeah, the offense struggled. The O-line, like, early, they were kind of like, there were some holes. Sure. And all of a sudden, those just, everything went awry. It just was Teddy Peno ass down is now Teddy Sitcho ass down for the rest of the season. He's redshirting. He's out for the year.
For the year?
Yeah. Mickey said after the game, Teddy's done. Which is,
did he tear his knee?
He hurt his knee. I think there were some people that felt like they rushed him back too far, too quickly, and they're wanting to shut him down now. So not Teddy Peno ass down is, so it's like a bad offensive line just lost its best offensive lineman, probably. And I mean, he maybe wasn't there physically, because Carlton Banks from North Dakota is like bull rushing you, like, that's not good.
Oh god,
it's not unusual to get bull rushed by anyone. When that's happening, that's not good.
That's how he makes his juke. Oh, he got it with that move.
Jenny's like, oh God, not unusual to get beat on the outside.
But so I don't know. Teddy pin your ass down.
It's not,
not unusual to get beat by anyone.
Oh, that's so good.
Who's that? Tom Jones, right?
Tom Jones.
What a great reoccurring bit on Fresh Prince.
Carlton loved is Tom the rich kid who will come from
Philly,
West Philadelphia. He comes from West Philadelphia, and he's like a rapper. And Carlton listens to Tom Jones and does. And do you know where he stole the dance from?
Where?
So,
you always have these great facts.
I know. So I believe this is true. It's from Bruce Springsteen's Dancing in the Dark video.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's essentially like
it kind of
what's
is,
the like, guy's name? Alfonso
Ribeiro.
Ribeiro. And yeah. I think he was like, what's the whitest white person dance?
Yeah,
and that is what he.
That is dancing. That's the Dancing in the Dark song, though.
Yeah.
Or Dancing in the Dark.
Yeah.
Dance.
It's, and that was like the thing in the '80s everybody did. So, like, he took that and, like,
but Bruce doing it? It's more Courtney Cox that comes on. No,
they both do it. Yeah, they both do it.
But did Courtney Cox explain to me was that at a real concert and
faked? It's a faked concert.
It's a staged thing. Okay.
Yeah. So that was like the music video, and he finds her in the crowd, and she comes up, and they dance.
That's pretty good. How did Courtney Cox land that thing?
She's an actress.
I know, but still, that was
her breakthrough.
Yeah, it was. Well, then
she's
second
older
thing,
than you think, though, because that means she was probably, what, 20 some years old there. And it was a decade later till she was in Friends.
Well, she was also in Ace Ventura.
Yes.
So
yes.
Prior to Friends, she was in Ace Ventura.
She was in Ace Ventura.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know what was wild? As you get older, we're now, we're both 38.
Yeah.
Oh my God. When the realization that we then became older than how old the Friends cast was, like how old the Friends were on Friends, when we were older than them, it was like, damn.
Because Friends were like 25 to 35, 10-year run.
Yeah.
And we're 38.
We're officially like, we're the old.
Like Ross.
How old was Richard that was dating Monica? Was Richard like 50?
I think Richard was 50.
Richard done did his thing.
I think Richard had.
He was taking Nugenics. He was taking Nugenics, the Frank Thomas little pill that he takes. But okay, so what? No, we were
Richard,
doing.
Richard, I think, let's be real. Chandler knows if Richard wanted.
If Richard would have showed up at the wedding and been like, Monica, I have a mustache.
That's Magnum P.I.
I have a lot of hair on my chest.
Chandler can't compete with Richard.
Dang it. Yeah. A lot of Friends on this episode so far. We have.
Yeah.
I don't know what.
Have you been watching Friends?
No. I just, the recliner kind of got us going.
Your head's definitely into Friends.
I am. I'm in Central Perk right now. So that's the conversation on The Office. I don't know what we're talking. No, Jenny, you pin your ass down. Tom Jones. He got Tom Jones. And now
Courtney Cox, no, Alfonso Ribeiro got that from Courtney Cox on the
that's how we did
video.
It. That's how we did it.
We always want to provide little nuggets of knowledge in this.
Well, you're the king of that. You always have just like these little facts that I just don't know if they really get you anywhere, but I like them.
So this is what my life has become, right?
So little found out. Little fact gathering.
The things I can't remember are important and I should know them. The things I do remember are worthless, and they're like that. That's what I remember.
I appreciate them. I appreciate them.
Well, good. That's what I hope somebody does.
This is good.
They're saved in there, but they're not worth it. Well,
that's okay,
no
though. I mean, that's so stupid, but I love it. I thoroughly enjoy it. The defense. I mean, do we want to even like... I thought the team speed looked terrible. I don't know if it's the angles or what it was. I just thought Nebraska looked slow. They were getting blown up in the trenches again. Mm-hmm. It is remarkable how that side of the ball has fallen off so dramatically. Like, what do you...
I don't know. It seems like we're struggling to get off blocks.
Yeah.
I mean, Urban, we can talk about Urban Meyer, but Urban was... It had some fanfare.
You think?
But anyway, he was, you know, he was up in the booth at one point, like just, yeah. Like, you know, as a co-analyst come up there.
Yeah, because Gus got sick. I don't know what happened to Gus.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. but whatever.
But, you know, so Urban's sitting there going like, you know, they're not even, he said, they're not even disguising the two deep. And he goes, they're running, every time they see it, they're running into it, right? So this is where this you're getting out schemed is like when we're not even disguising, they know we're in the two deep. That means we, you yep. know, they can get a guy advantage in the run game and they're running into it and we're not getting off blocks. Our safeties are coming down late, trying to tackle in space and not do. I mean, it was, it's like, it's been like clockwork for three or four games now, right? Like right. we can't, we're not handling that right now. So we're showing what we're doing. They're scheming us up and then we're not getting off blocks. Bad angles, bad tackling.
Yeah, that combination.
That combination gives up 500 yards. That's yeah. all. That's the best I can come up with.
Yeah, because they're giving up, and on the season, so they're giving up 233 yards per game on the ground. That's bottom five or six in the country at this point.
Yeah.
But it's just, again, I'm just trying to figure out if, like, because yeah, sometimes it's like any X's and O's. Is it X's and O's? Is it Jimmy's and Joe's? Like, I'd imagine they were doing a lot of the same things last year, but they just had guys that could hold up or make the tackle or make the play more often than not. I'm just, it's yeah. just incredible to think that, like, almost a year ago to the day-ish, I made the tunnel walk. Talking about how good this defense had played. You know, you got to go back to 2009, 2010 for the last time a defense has played up until this level.
Yeah.
And then to fast forward it to now and to that side of the ball struggles is really remarkable. And I don't know what to attribute it to other than there's probably some scheme. Like if when you don't, when your personnel isn't solid, your scheming and your stuff better be.
It gets more important.
It gets more important.
And I think as a combo, you can't say it's one of the, it's both. Like we are hurting because we lost the five or six guys
right.
we're talking about. Like we're hurting. We don't have those guys. And yeah, we haven't found the answer since they've left.
It's just, so let's get into Chinnell. I mean, the announcement today hits the announcement from Mickey Joseph. Little surprising. On a variety of levels, especially Mickey did, you know, Mickey really, really fell on the sword. He was smart yesterday after the game. He said, yeah. It's on me. It's not on the players. It's not on the assistant coaches. This is on me. And that's smart because I think everybody knows that it's not all on Mickey, but it's just the right thing to say. Sure. But it's interesting to say that. And then literally 24 hours later, you fire an assistant. Mickey Joseph in a statement said about firing Chinnander, "We appreciate Eric and the work and dedication he has given to our football program. At this time, I feel that it is in the best interest of the Nebraska football program to take the leadership of the defense in another direction and decided Bill Bush will take over as defensive coordinator."
Mm-hmm.
So for me, like my gut reaction to it is, I don't know what this move really does other than probably make a bad situation even worse. Like, I don't, this move, it adds more changes, it adds more stress, it adds more angst to a situation that is already chaotic. I also kind of look at this personnel right now, and I think you could fly in Bill Belichick and Nick Saban, and I'm not sure that this defense performs all that much better, to be real honest with you. I guess, how do you view this decision?
So let's start with, this came out 2 or 3 hours ago.
Yes. I mean,
we're
absorbing it. And,
you know, I there was a part of me that was interested to see if, you know, Chinnander was going to make it through the year. And then they made the move today, which,
yes.
you know, like you say, here's the hard part with that is, He
hadn't had a good four games.
He hadn't. It was getting worse.
Say that,
it was getting worse, and this was the low point in the 5 years we've been here defensively. I mean, this was the worst game we played on the national stage. So, like, to me, it's like we haven't stopped anybody. So I can see where Mickey's going. The defense needs some confidence. And the confidence has to come probably from a different voice. I don't think there's any scenario where you can have Chenander be a co-coordinator, or it doesn't work like that. It's, I think you have to get a completely different personality. I just think that's the way leadership works. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't, have him coach the safeties and doesn't work.
Yeah,
they
tried to kind of remember.
Can't reshuffle.
Yeah.
It's almost like they got to go and you got to find a whole new thing. So I think I have no idea what the philosophy is going to be, but I think they're going to do a lot of new things.
Okay.
I don't think
they're going to do that. Is that realistic to
now
change a bunch of stuff? I guess that's also a part of where I'm like, I don't know what this move does, because I just don't know all of a sudden you're going to revamp your defense. Now, you do got a bye week here.
You got to thank goodness they have a bye week. So I'm looking at Bill Bush. I mean, obviously, Bill Bush coached me years ago. For 1 year, I was the linebacker. He was a linebacker's coach. Then he went to safety. So I think safeties is where he wants to be, and he's always coached secondary, right? But he was a coordinator in 2000, I think maybe 9 through 11 at Utah State. So he's been a coordinator before. So I think, number one, Mickey knows Bill and worked with him at LSU, and Bill has been a coordinator before. So the weird thing is that Bill's the special teams coach.
Yes.
So I don't know what he's been doing day to day, how much he's been involved with things day to day up to this point with the defense. But obviously he was a defensive analyst last year. So he knows the
defense. He's familiar with the personnel and those kinds of things.
Is the terminology going to stay the same, but we're going to try some, new fronts, new movements, new sort of and it's a different play caller, a different schemer. Like, it's going to be different. I think rightfully so. Like, let's try something different. What we're trying is not working, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because it's tough where it's like, I think we've struggled with this entire time of it's hard for me to not know what happened last year and how that defense performed. Yeah. But at the end of the day, last year has probably you can't live off of last year. Like, you're living in now.
Yeah.
You can't. Well, what about when we went to East Lansing and stoned Kenneth Walker and shut him down? At the end of the day, that doesn't matter now. No. And that side of the ball is regressed. That side of the ball is not performing well. And I don't, more about defense than me, but you're saying, I think it's easy to see. There seemed to be a lot of damn, they got schemed there. Or, man, was that the right call for that?
And four straight games we got out schemed. Not this game, and then we were great for three. It's been four straight games.
Right.
And I think if you're here's how I'm seeing it. If you're Mickey Joseph, what does bringing Chenander back do for this situation that he's in? I would say nothing. There's nothing after that loss. So let's say we lose close. Chenander keeps his job because there's no reason for Mickey to make a change.
Yep.
But Mickey, now they got embarrassed on national TV.
After that is just a long line of getting kind of embarrassed.
In four straight games, defensively, we've been bad.
This is as bad as Nebraska defense has performed in a long time.
So for Mickey, he's got to send a signal to his team and the, Nebraska Nation that this isn't how this is going to work. We're doing something to change this. He's got it. I think for him, he's got to do that.
Okay. I can see that.
What I'm saying?
I guess
you're going to go back and just drop the same old thing again. That's four straight weeks.
Right.
Right. Where I think for Mickey, he goes, he knows Bill Bush.
Right.
I think he feels more comfortable saying, Bill, why don't you try it for a week? Because 4 weeks of this,
and maybe at this point, the season's already heading towards nowhere.
Yeah.
So you can stay the course and likely continue just on your course towards nowhere.
Yeah.
Maybe at this point, as we talk this out, maybe at this point, trying everything you can to change it. In order to change the outcome, you probably got to change something with your process or what you're doing.
For sure. For sure. I mean, you should. I mean, all I know is, like, you know, Tommy Hill got pulled.
Yeah.
They brought another guy who then had a penalty and he got pulled. And then, you know, then what's his name? Is it Braxton Clark was in there? Like, they're throwing new dudes in there. I saw a couple dudes. I was like, I don't even know who that number is. Like,
well, yeah, they're trying. I mean, even I think it got to the point where it was like there's no reason in keeping Casey Thompson in there. But Chuba came in there and Chuba played a lot in the second half.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're clearly like it's not just talk when I think. In Mickey's eyes, like he said, we're starting all over, like everything's starting over and you're going to get what you earn. And that goes for everybody, including the coaches. And so I just worry. I guess I'm coming at it from like, yeah. I worry about like how much can the heart take from I'm worried about the and maybe. Again, when Frost was fired, I was worried that, man, the players are going to be devastated. They didn't seem that devastated. But maybe they internalized it better. Then even like I'm coming from a place like I assumed the dudes loved Frost. I assumed the dudes loved Eric Chenander. Where if you're a coach, like, or you're a player, it's a that's a lot to like think like what you're doing just got your head coach fired and the defensive coordinator fired.
Yeah.
Like I worry about how all that actually lands with the players. And then just like, I'm sure it's kind of chaotic in those offices right now, the coaching offices where everybody's having to do different things. And this just adds another change to it all that I just get concerned with. Again, I love our conversations. We can kind of talk these things out.
I mean, I'm like going through the, like you say that now I'm thinking to myself, okay, let's think back. All right. So I had some coaches that were in a situation where they were, I mean, Bill Bush was on the staff. Like
yes.
Those guys knew they were on the way out. Like to me, it's like if they would have done something middle of the year that year, I kind of think that would have been good.
Okay. This is great. This is great insight.
Now that I'm like, okay, we went through like once we hit a couple of those bad losses.
Right.
And we just felt like we're getting just like picked on, like out schemed.
Right.
Like we're doing everything.
Remember wrong. Missouri came to town and their line, I think it was Chase Daniel was like, this was a high school defense. Like in terms of it's like,
they knew what we were doing.
Scheme, you know? And like,
I was told years later, when I was training for the NFL and somebody spoke to somebody and basically told them like, yeah, they told me they knew all of your signals, they knew everything that you were going to do because it was just so obvious. And like, and that hurt to know, like, man, like they, like we gave them all the answers to the test and then we played the game, you know, like,
right.
Like that's the type of stuff though, that I'm looking back on now going, when the season's looking like it's about to torpedo anyway, don't you try to shake it up and get a new voice in there
and
not beat the same dead horse.
You're probably all year. Right. Yeah.
So now, Nick, I don't know. Bill Bush was a coach of mine. I'd never seen him as a coordinator.
Like, I don't know. I don't know his chops. I don't know if he's good enough. He's going to come in there and, you know.
I don't know. Here's what I don't
know. Going to be playing chess. And
I think so. He's worked for some good coaches.
Mm-hmm.
He's a smart guy. He works hard. He'll plan and work hard and plan well. What I've never known him, I've never known him as a in-game caller. Like, can he call the game, the chess match in the game?
Right.
Can he make the adjustments
right.
when they come out in this?
Yeah.
That is what I don't know about Bill Bush. And that's going to be his, you know, this is his ship now that he gets to sail. Like, this is it. Like, we'll see what he's got. I don't know that part of him. I do know like he's going to work. He's going to be detailed. He's going to do those things, preparing. But like the end game stuff, that's the, what I don't know about Bill.
Right. I also think, I don't know how to even like phrase this. I wonder if Mickey's a little bit in the mode of like, he's wanting to make sure that he's got not, this isn't to say that Chenander was checked out or everybody knows he was Frost guy. We all probably knew he wasn't going to be retained.
Yeah.
Mickey not only isn't Mickey's not only coaching for the moment, but I think Mickey is trying to show what he can do to see if he can earn to remove that interim tag. And so maybe he's trying to do all he can to surround himself with people that have skin in the game to not want to have to call a moving company and have to move out of Lincoln, Nebraska. Does that make sense?
I think that's kind of what I was almost kind of getting at. Is like, I think Mickey Joseph knows, like, for him to turn this thing around and to like get this job.
Right.
Cause I mean, and this isn't a bad, he wants to do it for the kids, but he wants to earn this role.
Right. You don't think Mickey wants to be the head coach? I don't want
Mickey to be the coach unless he wants this that bad. Right. He does. So I know he wants it. And I am not saying that's a bad thing. He's not doing it for himself. He's doing it for the team too.
They're both helping, they can be aligned.
Yes. Right. But like, I think Mickey knows this. That game was huge. If they play really well and or win, he's the front runner to get the job.
Yes.
They get embarrassed on TV. It sort of moves him into a way more difficult position to ever get that job. So I think he can still get it, but this is now becomes a, we got Indiana, Rutgers. Is it Purdue? Purdue than Illinois?
Correct. So you got four other than Purdue. You got four. I mean, even I don't think Purdue's in it.
Nick, I think if he goes 4-for-4, he moves back up
right
on the job
because
ladder.
I'll be honest. Last week when we were talking about Mickey as a candidate, I'll let you into my internal monologue. I was not like even entertaining that in my head. I'm like, Mickey's not. It's a nice thing to say, but I just don't know if Mickey's going to be the guy. But as the week progressed and you see him, you see how the fans react to him, and you see him at a press conference, and you see him leading him out of the tunnel, and you go, maybe Mickey could be the guy, you know? And again, for that to happen, like things got to change in a hurry. And you have four games here that are vital. And so as we talk this out, like it's maybe not as bad of a idea and move as like at this point, like, you know, this is the biggest cliche that every broadcaster uses all the time. Like, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. I think he's kind of sitting there going like, if we run this back right now with the same,
I mean,
schemer, Nick, plan, all that
Mickey's,
stuff.
Like, Mickey's there because Trev made these kids need a different voice. Like, right. I think it's the same logic with Chins. Like, the defense needs a different voice. Like, that's sort of what, that's first what I thought. I was like, well, I get it. But yeah, I think, and Mickey knows, I think Nick is not going past four games. Like, it's a four.
They have a four. I mean,
if he loses two in a row, Nick, I think it's almost like it's not going to rule it out, but they're going to try to hire somebody by, I would think, November to get ahead on recruiting would be my guess.
That's if you're not, I mean, it's hard. It depends on who you're hiring. Like, some people are still, if let's say you're hiring Matt Campbell or you're hiring whoever, like you have to let them finish their season and then it happens. But I think what you're saying is, like, I think from Trev's perspective, and Mickey understands this, like, Trev's got it. Now, I think Trev's probably operating like he has to facilitate candidates and vet candidates. And if Mickey ends up being the guy, great, but he has to operate almost like Mickey's not going to be the guy. And
the timing then gets into by mid, like, you've got the conversations have to be like progressing to the point where the like executing them is like end of, you know, mid to late November, so that when they finish their year, hey, cool. Sorry. Yeah. You're coming. You're coming with us and you're recruiting for Nebraska in December.
Oh yeah.
So that's where Mickey's got. I think he's got four games. I think if he goes 4-for-4, and then we are in a really good spot in the West division of the Big Ten, right? Then we're going to be 3-1 in the West.
Yeah, these next four games shape everything.
I mean, so it's in a weird way, Mickey, like, you know, like Nebraska right now doesn't feel like we got anything to play for, but like reality's like we still got the Big Ten season ahead of us.
Sure. I mean, but it's hard to
get optimistic on it.
Yeah.
Because Nick, we can't stop anything.
I mean, because I would say, like, this is a really doom and gloom. Like, I was texting somebody this morning and I texted him. I said, I really don't think it's out of the question that Nebraska doesn't win another game. Based on the football team that I am seeing, it's not out of the question that they win one football game this year.
That's very possible. That's on the table.
I'm just saying the degree, like we're sitting here and be like, well, what if they win four? Like, it's also possible that this shit goes, you think it's going poor now? This is because this is what I was a little concerned with. I want to come back to the defense for a second, but this was my concern last week when the announcement got made from Trev, and Trev going like, you know, doing the whole thing, like wanting to give the players a chance, want to give this season a chance. Well, that can go the other way. Like, you make these changes and then all of a sudden, like, everyone checks out, things start going terrible, the coaches start seeing the writing on the wall, especially with the transfer portal. You talked about how you felt
redshirting Teddy.
You're
redshirting people, like, right. that's usually
Well, you talked about how you felt it in 07. You felt certain coaches, I don't want to say check out, but you could feel that they knew they were done. You could even, you've talked about how you felt guys on the team pseudo checked out. Like, I'm just saying, like, there's especially with the transfer portal and how you can, I mean, you know, there's some of those dudes right now that probably got back to their dorm, like, man, I'm out of here.
Or I'm an NFL guy. I just don't want to get hurt. You know, like, you're like, you're not an NFL guy if you can't, you can't beat North Dakota.
Right. Or you're getting 642 yards hung on you at Georgia.
Southern.
So I'm just like, one of my concerns was like, When the decision got made to fire Frost was like, there's a chance that this season spirals into a place that is worse than anybody could imagine. Where let's say these next, you go lose to Indiana and then you go lose to Rutgers, which is entirely possible.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden these players know it's a wrap. You got guys already start probably like calling their high school coach and saying, can you start putting out some feelers about the portal? And I don't know who's going to be here next year and all that. Like, so I'm just nervous about like all this stuff spiraling. Like I think what's hard is you got to make changes to get a different result, but all these changes can lead to a worse result.
Well, yeah, I think it's more, I think there's enough talent in this team to win a few games. There's no doubt. Like, I think we can win a few games. But yeah, how they will respond to criticism,
to all this to change, the letdown, to the uncertainty.
Yeah. Like, can you stay in it?
Cause I'd imagine it'd be hard. Like, think how hard it would have been in 07 when you were a senior. So you knew you were done. I'd imagine you had some younger guys on the team. The uncertainty of like, is Bill Callahan going to Coach Callahan's not going to be here next year? Fuck. Well, who are they going to bring in? Well, what if they don't, like, all of a sudden you start thinking about those things and then your mind's in the wrong place, but it's human nature for those things, for your mind to go there. And that's the hard thing that Mickey and now Bill Bush and Whip and all those guys have on their of like getting those guys to like try to not worry about anything. Whatever happens after Thanksgiving, we'll cross that bridge when it comes. But you guys got to stay focused on now.
That's Mickey. Like, Mickey is gonna earn his keep these next, because I mean game interview that he's got. That's the interview.
It's, right.
Can you keep these guys together, and can you keep teams that on paper you pretty much should have beat at the start of the year? Like, on paper, me and you predicted, I think, three out of these four we were going to win.
Right.
Right.
I know. Well, yeah. No, I think I predicted they would lose to Rutgers and Purdue. So I had them going 2-2 in these next four games. But at the end of the day, I had them 4-0 at this point.
Yeah.
Idiot across my head here. But like,
that's my point of like, That's why this is an interview for Mickey. Like, Mickey Joseph's interview is 4 weeks, four games.
Yes.
It could have been a one game interview. We beat Oklahoma. That's a one game interview.
Everything's what different. I do. Then, you know,
win a couple the rest of the year. He's probably shown a lot.
And again, it's not lost on me that Nebraska is really bad. Okay. Because by the way, Northwestern has not won a game since Dublin. They just lost to Southern Illinois at home. Okay. Georgia Southern this past weekend, lost by 14 to UAB.
Georgia Southern lost.
So all I'm saying is there's a chance Nebraska's even worse than we think they are. Okay. But with all that said, it's not like, I mean, Indiana had to rally to beat Western Kentucky at home in overtime. Let's not make Indiana out to be the Baltimore Ravens here.
Yeah.
You know, Rutgers beat Temple 16 to 14. Let's not act like Rutgers is the greatest team in the world. You know,
Illinois.
Okay. They were off this week, but you know, they lost to, I think they lose to Indiana.
I think so.
I think they did. I don't think Illinois is great. Purdue's fine. I think Purdue's pretty good. I don't think Purdue's like amazing.
They're not world beaters. I mean, shit.
It's not like, that's the one thing you do have to remind yourself is like Nebraska did just play the sixth ranked team in the country. Like in that team, Dylan Gabriel's fucking good. Marvin Mims is good. Those running backs are good. They got some ballers on that side
of the country. They looked like the sixth team in the country. They didn't look like some of those Ohio State teams we've seen where we're like, man, like every receiver is like a first rounder. Like they looked good, but we just looked exposed. Well, like we got picked on. And that's the problem. I do think we've got enough talent. I mean, I think we're very lucky to have Casey Thompson. He's a guy that can win us games. I really believe it. But can we stay in it? Can we make some changes to keep us in games and let Thompson have an opportunity?
Well, the thing that is, because I'm with you, like I think Casey Thompson, Anthony Grant, Trey Palmer, Marcus Washington, Travis Vokolek, AJ Allen, those skill guys are good enough to make some things happen. The reality, and this is what got exposed against Oklahoma, is like, again, like I said at the top, football is about blocking and tackling. Mm-hmm. And if you can't do those things, it doesn't matter. Nebraska, you could have given, honestly, if Nebraska has Patrick Mahomes on Saturday instead of Casey Thompson, I don't think they win.
I don't know, because you got to have guys that get open and catch
the ball. And you got to have people that can block for more than a second.
Yeah, what would Mahomes done that Thompson couldn't have done?
I mean, I'm dead serious. Like
There was no throws. Like, oh, he just can't.
You know,
make
our buddies
throw.
Always talk about, like, we do those stupid high throws. Like, you put Peyton Manning on the worst Class A Nebraska high school team. Do they win state? And it would always be a great debate. And I would always say no.
No, well.
Now, if you gave like Lamar Jackson or, you know, like prime Michael Vick, like, I'm talking about like a dude that is can just like, how are you ever going to tackle him?
Yeah, because you can't really make audibles very well in high school. Like, you just blitz every time and Peyton would be like, I just can't even, they won't pick up my blitzes.
Right,
you know, like,
right. So I guess I'm just bringing it up to say, like, you can poo-poo Casey Thompson all you want and how he played. Like, I'm not so sure that if you had Patrick Mahomes quarterbacking Nebraska on Saturday, that the outcome is really all that different.
No, Nick, I know. I mean, Patrick Mahomes played for Texas Tech and like,
when like they were winning a bunch of games, like, you know,
they weren't a great team and a great line, but I mean, he's a great player, but if you cannot protect the quarterback, you can't hand the ball off and get on track. You know, I think, like I said, they needed to play a different game than they played, which would have been like they should have ran the ball and they should have ran the clock down, shorten the game, keep the defense off the field. Like, I mean, we're still not executing what we need to do to win football games or at least keep us in it. We let that thing become a bloodbath.
I want to go back real quick to the Bill Bush thing now being the coordinator. What are realistic changes that you can make? Now you have a bye week, which is great, so you have more time, but what are realistic schematical changes that you can make right now?
I mean, you could put in a different system I just think the hard part is I don't think they're going to change terminology,
right?
I don't think these geniuses are going to be able to
pick it up in
a week. It'd be
hard for anybody.
Well, it is. It'd be a nightmare. It'd be a nightmare to do, and it'd be a nightmare for the coaches to try to even attempt it. So they're going to use the same terminology, but like probably run, you know, what Bush has ran in the past. My guess would be more like they're going to talk about, we're going to run this. It's going to be different what we've done. and they're going to have a week and a half to try to get people comfortable with some different fits, some different stunts, with different blitzes. I mean, this is going to be a super difficult thing to do, but they're going to have to try.
Yeah.
But at this point, Nick, I think it's worth trying.
Yeah, you're probably right. This is why it's fun to talk it out. Like when I first got the news, my initial reaction was like, "What this? Yeah. I don't know what this does other than make a horrible situation even worse." But now that, like, after talking to you, I think I now I see the other side of it. And I'm not so sure I don't agree with you.
Yeah, that's the football. We're talking the football. Like, you can use other sports where, like, I mean, I don't know if basketball is a great analogy, but like, you might say, like, gosh, we just don't got the speed. So we're going to get really good at, we had a week and a half to work on our 1-3-1 and we're going to do a lot of it.
Yes.
You know, like, yeah, that's like a very big, like, we're going to try something different, or we're going to become a full court pressure team because we need to speed the other team up all game. We're going to make this game mucky and ugly, or whatever it is. Like, it's something to change,
but what
it's to change the momentum and the, like, you're trying to just, like, we're going to mess this up one way or another.
Right. And you need to manufacture some confidence right now. I think it'd be hard to keep the guys going. Like, we just got to stay in the base defense and do what we do. And it's, and like,
give up 500. Like, yeah. That would be, trust me, especially watching that happen, Nick.
Yes.
This is one, like, our buddy Willie loved the game that we played against Texas in 2007. People remember. We go down to Texas and we blitzed every play and we stoned them for about three quarters because we just said,
we're selling out.
Then Jamal Charles just, like, they finally busted through in some plays and, you know, gashed us in the fourth quarter for long runs, yada, yada. But at least give us that we were aggressive. We changed it up.
Right.
And we weren't going to sit back in zone like we did against Missouri and Texas A&M and Oklahoma State and just get lambasted by these teams that knew what we were going to do. We changed it up. Now, we didn't win, but we were competitive into the fourth quarter on a team that was – the rails were coming off. The coach was done. This, I think, is a similar mindset. It is – We have to change the scenario here.
And
it gives us a chance to dictate, maybe.
Yeah,
well, versus being dictated to.
Again, what I said a little bit ago of how, like, I'm still thinking about last year, and in my mind, I'm like, you got to preserve that. Like, whatever you were doing there was working okay, but it's like, this is a totally different situation because it's totally different players, and so, to argue against myself, like, what are you preserving? You know, what are you really being like, oh no, you got to stay the course with the defense right now? Because that would be what, if I'm arguing against this, if I'm saying Chenander should not be fired, you got to keep him there. It would stand to reason for me to agree with the statement of, like, you believe in the direction of the defense and what's going on there, and you got to stay the course with that. And it's like, I don't believe that. So maybe if I don't believe that, then you have to give yourself a chance and do something different.
So that's it. Like, to me, it's about belief. Like, if you don't believe that, you know, your coordinator, then that's, you know, that's system and play calling is going to be good enough in the future, like, you have to make the move. And I think that's the point it reached, is you had three games where it was just terrible, right? And then I think that there's probably that moment after Frost was fired where it's like, this is the time to make some big changes if you're Chenander.
Right.
And the changes didn't get made. It got worse.
Right.
I think belief was lost probably after that. I think it was the right move. I do. Like,
yeah. I mean,
I don't even like saying that out loud.
No, I know, because it's hard. Cause it's like, you know, I mean,
yeah,
it's, you know, you never want to,
but it's like, what are you going to do the rest of the year? If this is like the trend we're on, like, you have to dictate and give yourself a chance to control the narrative.
You've played maybe the best offense you'll play in Oklahoma, but then you've maybe also played the three worst offenses you've played, and you've gotten your shit handed to you. So it's probably naive to think that all of a sudden it's gonna flip and they're gonna be really good unless they make some big changes, and this would fall under that category of making a big change.
Yeah.
Last thing, and then we'll run here. Is the sellout streak in serious jeopardy? Indiana, 2 weeks.
Oh yeah, it is, but it's also, what do the donors want to do? I mean, if the donors want to give the tickets away in the red carpet or the thing, like,
yeah,
I think that they can do it.
My prediction is that it ends. I think the Indiana game is the end of 300. They're at 385, 385 consecutive sellouts. I don't think that's my gut tells me. I don't think they're gonna get to 386.
I mean, this is so hard because,
and I don't even know if it's that big of a deal. Cause I think we all know, like, listen to your answer. Depends on what the donor wants to do. Like the donors want to do, because that tells you how, yeah, I'm not saying the streak is real and it's like in the books, but I think we all know that it's been a little bit of a fabricated streak.
We've manufactured a little bit.
Or manufactured is a better way to.
But I would say this, when you have something special like we do, I think it's important to think about the long term. It's really cool. It's really cool that we've got that good of fans and that much support, that it's not like we're manufacturing 85,000 fake seats sold.
Yeah, it's not like there's 40,000 like, people in there and it's sold out, people. It's
we've
like, no.
We've added 20 or 30,000 seats over the years. Like, okay, like we've added maybe too many seats, which was like bad on us. So like, to me, it's like, if we're 40,000 short, it should end. If we're 5,000 short, keep the thing going. So the next guy that gets in,
right,
it's a recruiting tool. It's something to take pride in. It's one of our, it's our institution. This is our thing. Like, we should cherish it. And if it's close, donors, I really hope you.
It'll be interesting.
It's hard to be like, Nick, would you pay for it?
I know. I know that's the hard part, is like you're preserving, you're investing into something that you're just, I don't know, right now it's not your return on investment for Nebraska football isn't quite there for these people. But I don't know. It'll be interesting.
I know some people like, let it die. But like, I'm like,
no, I'm not one of those people. It's like, you need to let it die.
So that you can have, like, it's a significant record. It's a cool tradition. Something to be proud of. Let's just bridge the gap to the next guy. Let's just bridge it. If the next guy can't win, maybe we'll talk about it.
There are certain traditions that get hung over the current situation could be viewed as a detracting thing.
Yeah.
I don't see how a sellout streak does anything but help the program.
It's a positive. It's a cool thing. It's like the academic All-Americans. Like, I think we've had the most academic All-Americans.
That stuff. I don't know why you'd be rooting for the sellout streak to change or to end, when it's like, for a long time, there were some of our buddies would be like, the sellout streak needs to end for a message to the football program that it's like, this isn't acceptable. It's like, I think message is received. Everyone knows that this isn't acceptable. They're making massive changes.
Yes.
You know,
that's
like,
the point. That's the point people always want to make.
They always be like, this,
they need to send the message.
You need to send the message. The best message you can send is to not go to the game. It's like,
they fire the coach. They fire everybody, the coordinator.
Trev knows. And the people in Ronnie Green and, you know, Hank, like, these guys know this isn't acceptable. They need a better product.
Yeah.
But I don't see how ending the sellout streak necessarily impact. So I don't know. I think it's in serious jeopardy. I mean,
oh, Nick,
Trev has been on the radio a couple of weeks ago and said there were still thousands of tickets available for the Indiana game. And with how that Oklahoma game went, and the fact that it's Indiana, I'm not so sure there isn't a less exciting team. And I don't mean this to be like negative on Indiana, but I just don't know if there's not a team that would probably evoke less excitement than Indiana coming.
Sure. But see, this is where this might sound, maybe this isn't as true as I think it is, but firing your coordinator and getting a new fresh body in there, it's one more thing that,
yeah, a storyline. Yeah,
Nebraska fans are curious. They're curious people. They go, okay, well, maybe we'll give them one or two more games to see if we start playing better D. You know, like,
right.
Nebraska fans, they love their team, and I really do think that they'll always find a reason to be like, well, I'll give them one more chance. Yeah.
Well, I mean, think about what happened. Who would have thought that they don't have a kick time? I was seeing if they had a kick time yet. That's to be determined. But who would have thought this Oklahoma game, I mean, and now it's Oklahoma, so you would think it would probably be a great atmosphere, but like, if you would have, the ingredients were there for not necessarily the atmosphere that it was to start with, you know? And so it'd just be interesting. I just wrote that down like this. I mean, that would be a big streak to come to an end.
It's scary. It's going to be close.
But what's interesting about it is like, it would take, to your point though, how you initially answered the question, it would take a group of people letting it go.
I would think so.
The way I think I understand how it works, like, it would take some big boosters being like, we're not going to write this check for
I don't
whatever.
Sense that the boosters that have been supporting it are the type of people that are going to be wishy-washy on whether they want to keep, you know, it seems to me like they would feel a certain way about the streak and they would want to.
And again, I think the fact that there's Frost has been fired, like they understand changes are being made because I think there maybe would have been if the donor, like, let's say I'm Johnny Donor and I've been called on numerous times to write a check to keep the streak going. And I don't think Frost is the answer and I want him gone and he's still there. Yeah. Well, maybe that's like your opportunity as a donor to showcase your disdain and disagreement with what's going on. But if you are now, this is assuming that whatever this Johnny Donor that we've created, like, wanted Frost to be gone, which I would think is true. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens. So we'll see. Streak to come to an end.
I think a week off is good for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, it's been long.
But it's huge for the player. It's huge for the team. Not only do they probably need to like get away from it for a second, but they need to have a really productive week with new coordinator working on stuff. Like they got a lot of work to do, a ton to get done in this bye week. Usually think bye week, like, got to get healthy.
Yeah.
They need to, they got to get healthy and they got to improve.
Yeah.
Oh my big God. Time. Anything we're missing? Anything we didn't talk about? I figured for our wine pod, we'll get into coaching candidate stuff.
Yeah.
You want to do that?
Let's save
the wine pod coaching. I mean, because it's been interesting to all the names thrown out there. You and I will kind of, let's comb through a bunch of names for the next wine pod.
That'll
be a good wine pod.
Yeah. Perfect.
Other than that, there you go.
I think we should, in honor of the day.
Not unusual to end the game recap. A Huda Media Production.